1919, June the 27th. And we stayed there. My dad worked in the tile yard over by Britain, so we lived in this place we was renting for 3 years. Then we moved and lived with my grandfather in Macon Township. And there I proceeded to the Macon School, or the Ridge School, and I finished the third grade there. Then we moved from there to Adrian, Michigan, and we lived 2 years over there, which I done the fourth and fifth. Then my dad was a sharecropper, and then we moved to Britain, Michigan, back to Britain, Michigan, where I went to a country school over there, and I went 2 years. Then we moved again. We moved to Macon, Michigan. And at Macon, Michigan, I went to the country school up there for 2 years. Then I went to Ford High School, which I went 3 years. Then we moved from Macon to Cone, Michigan. And we lived there 2 years, which I didn't. I quit school in about the 10th grade, I guess it was. So we moved from then. We stayed there in Cone Farm for 2 years. Then we moved to Milan, Michigan. And I got a job in the Ann Arbor Construction Company. I was running a jackhammer on putting in the main street in Ann Arbor. Then I got promoted to a material deliverer, which I used a truck to run all over Ann Arbor with. Then Uncle Sam blew his whistle, April the 23rd, 1941, and I went in the service. So I went down to Louisiana, Camp Livingston, Louisiana, for years training in service. The war hadn't broke out yet. And following then, December the 7th, I was laying on my bunk in Camp Livingston, Louisiana. Was on a Sunday morning, and that's when the Japs hit Pearl Harbor. Then we had to start guarding the bridges and over the Mississippi River, and I went to New Orleans. They sent me to New Orleans, and they sent quite a few soldiers in New Orleans. And anyway, I was with a medical detachment, so I set up a pro station to take care of the boys when they got done playing with the girls. went back to Livingston after the, and MacArthur wanted us, Eisenhower wanted us to go over and fight with in the war over there. So we got our trucks all ready and convoy. We moved to Fort Devens, Massachusetts. And we got in Fort Devens, Massachusetts. We was there about a week. And our order, MacArthur wanted us and go to New Guinea to fight. And so we went, put our stuff all on the railroad cars, and we went from there to San Francisco, which took us 7 days. We unloaded in San Francisco. We stayed in a place called the Cow Palace till we got our orders to head for Australia. And took us 26 days to go to Australia, because that's when the Coral Sea battle was going on. And we had to change our course every 3 minutes, afraid of getting hit by one of the submarines. So we landed in Australia. We couldn't go up around Brisbane up in that way, because that's where all the fighting was, up around closer to New Guinea. So they sent us to a place called Adelaide, Australia. Well, we got in Adelaide, Australia, and when you're with a bunch of soldiers, they drink. And we stayed there about 3 weeks. And one morning, the colonel fell us in and said, "We're moving." He said, "I understand there's 900 girls in this Adelaide, Australia that are pregnant." So we were on the move. Well, I did not know nothing to do with that. But then we went from there, got on boxcars. And in Australia, they have six different gauge tracks. And so you go so far, then you got to unload your stuff and put it on another boxcar. And we had a lot of Jeeps and weapons carriers and six-wheelers. So we ended up in Brisbane, Australia. And from there, they organized us, and we went to, we went over the old Stanley Mountains, the outfit I was with, 126th Infantry. I was 2nd Battalion, 126th Infantry. I was attached to them as a medic. Anyway, we walked over the mountains. It took us 32 days. And that's when we met the Japanese. We was 850 strong in our outfit that we was with there. And the day we marched out of there, there was 97 left. Well, I was one with the 97, one of the lucky ones. Anyway, during the battle there, I can remember one morning they said, "Stretcher bearer." That was the first base day. They said, "Grab a stretcher. There's a guy wounded out there." So we got out there to pick him up. And man, I laid right on the ground. It was just like scissor fire. You know, I'd hear him shooting over my head. You know, zzz, zzz, zzz. It was really something. I mean, tell you, I was scared. Anyway, we got this guy and got him back to first aid station. And this went on, you know, for quite a while. We used three different generals in that push. They get relieved. They couldn't do the job. So MacArthur had them relieved. And the last lieutenant general we had was General Eichelberger. And I remember him coming up, and he had his boy with him, his aide man with him, and they were spraying the trees. And there was a good 2 miles from the front lines. I told that boy, I said, "My gosh," he said, "there's nothing here." I said, "Wait till you get up further." "Why, ain't this where the Japs are?" I said, "No, they're up a little further than that." Well, we won that battle, and they flew us to Port Moresby, and it took us 42 minutes to fly it back, where it took 32 days to walk over. So I had malaria, so they sent me to a malaria rest camp where they try to get you back on your feet. And we got this malaria rest camp. I was there 6 weeks. And finally, they released me. And I had malaria. Well, I had a fever, 105, and I had malaria, I think, 12 times while I was there and through the, you know, in Australia. So we went back to this Camp Claiborne, not Clap Claiborne, but I can't think of the name of that camp right now. Anyway, it was there in Brisbane. We went back there and reorganized to go back and hit the Japs again. So we reorganized, and we went back. New Guinea battle was all over. We had to go into, I forget, the Dutch New Guinea. That was a place where all the fighting was going on up there. And so we went in there, and from there we proceeded, and we got on a ship after that. I'll tell you a little story. One Sunday morning, we heard all these planes flying over when it was at Dutch New Guinea. All these planes are flying over, and pretty soon the captain come running out and says, "Get everything ready. They're going to have to, there's about six or seven planes that are out of fuel. They're from an aircraft carrier, but they ain't got no more fuel, so they're going to brush land." So they brought them in a treetop high, and they tried to, and on the beach, and I think quite a few of them were killed, but they saved some of them. And from there we reorganized and went to the Philippines. Well, about the fourth day while I was on Luzon, the Philippines, I was on an outpost with a friend of mine. We, for the artillery, we had these guys, observers, they were observing where our artillery was hitting, the Japs. So we was out there as a first aid man. I was, me and my friend Charlie Grant. And they hollered, "Medic." So we had a rice paddy to go over. Somebody got hit. So we get over there, and this fellow was, I don't know, he's hitting the leg or side or something. We went to pick him up, and that's when the Japs threw a blast in there, and they hit this boy right in the head to kill him right there. Well, I knew he was gone, so then that's when I got hit. They hit me 3 times in the left leg, and they cut the artery, but and I could see the Japs running down out of this little hill there in front of us. So I, just Charlie Grant says, we got to get out of here. So I ran, and when they cut the artery in my leg, and then, you know, when your heart pumps that blood, you don't take long, you ain't got no blood left. So they got back there and threw me to the outpost station. They threw me on a litter with the Filipinos for them, and they started running with me. They strapped me down. Charlie Grant put a tourniquet on my leg, and we started running with me. And evidently the tourniquet came off. So we got back to our lines, and we had a doctor there, Dr. Burns. He says, man, Charlie, he's bad. He lost so much blood, I don't think he'll ever make it. I didn't know that. The doctor told one of the other boys, because you could press my nails. I had no blood left. The litter was full of blood. Anyway, Charlie Grant and this doctor, they gave me some blood plasma. That's what saved my life. And they put me in an ambulance, sent me to a field hospital there in Luzon. And Dr. Burns said, well, I don't think Charlie will ever make it out of this one. Well, I did. I stayed in this hospital for up there in Luzon for about 3 weeks, I guess. And they gave me blood and took the bullet out, one of the bullets out of my leg, two went right straight through. And they put me on a stretcher and they took me to a little airport, a little airstrip they had there. They said, we're going to fly you into Lady Island to a field hospital. So we was all there joking, you know, and, you know, army boys will talk. And, oh, I was groaning and moaning, and I looked over there, and this guy was laughing, talking to another guy. And when they took the plane to take all us over to Lady Island, the field hospital, they took the blanket off this guy, and he had no legs at all. Boy, I didn't say no more. So we got to Lady Island, and I stayed there about, must have been a month, trying to get my leg healed up. And it got infected. I was all set to come home on the rotation, you know. You have so many points, and I had a lot of points. So I was all set to come home. And I got infected, so I couldn't go with it. And I had to stay there for another month. Well, finally, they got a heal up so I could travel, and one morning they called my name down, Charles Agner, and I said, here. I said, you are now being shipped to the States. Oh, man, my morale was about 1,000 points. So they stuck us this airplane, there were 7 of us, in this old airplane. And on the way, we were going to Guam. We were heading to Guam to catch another plane out of Guam to Johnson Island. Well, on the way, one of the oil line or something broke, and we had oil all over the window, and what a mess we had. The pilot had a heck of a time flying the plane. So finally got into Guam, and that's when they were using these B-29s to bomb Saipan, and they put us right in a primal tent right by the runway. Well, we stayed there 3 nights, I think it was. The second night, something come through our tent. Holy mackerel, about the size of a football. It was a piece of shrapnel. One of these planes, these 29s is coming back from bombing Saipan, the bomb got hung up in the bomb way, and they couldn't get rid of the bombs. So what are you going to do? So he was landing and it exploded. And it blew up right on the runway. So that's where the shrapnel come from. Well, we stayed there 3 days, and finally they got us all together, 7 of us, and then we headed for Kwajalein. That's a little island in the Pacific. And this island is just big enough for a plane to land, and they have to back up, put her in the water, to have enough room to take off. Well, we went over there, we have to stop there to fuel up. So we fueled up there in Kwajalein. Then we flew to another island called Johnson. and we fueled up there. Then we flew from Johnson Island to Hickam Field, Hawaii. That's where anybody was overseas fighting, that's where if you had anything, they took it away from you. Well, I had a Colt 45 revolver that I used all through the Army, all through the war, and they salvaged that, they took that away from me, and I had a few other things, Japanese watch, they took that. And we was there about, I think, 4 days, and they called our name off, said, you're now heading for Hampton Field, California, San Francisco. So we all got on the plane, and we took off for Hampton Field, California. On the way, we was going out probably half, three quarters an hour, I don't know. Pilot come on the PA, says, hey, said, we got to turn to Hickam Field. He says, no alarm, don't feel nervous or nothing. He says, something's come up, we got to go back. So we landed in Hickam Field, and the captain says, did you ever kiss the ground? You want to kiss it here, because he says, I don't know how we made it without blowing up. Evidently, when they fueled the plane up, one of the tanks, they didn't put the cover on tight, and it come off. The gas tank cover come off, and fuel oil was all over the plane. Looked like you'd give it a bath in fuel oil. He says, one spark, and we'd have been gone. So we had to wait another 2 days. Finally, we got a plane for Hampton Field, California, Hampton Field, San Francisco. So we got on a plane, we went to San Francisco. We got there, stayed there 3 days. Then we got a train to Illinois, Camp Sheridan, where we got our discharge. I got discharged there. Well, I was in a hurry to go home, and the doctor says, you want to put in for a pension? Oh, yeah, sure. I said, I'm hip, I guess I deserve one. He says, you're going to have to stay here and get a physical, take it 2 or 3 days. Oh, man, I said, I want to go home now. Well, he says, you think it over, it'd mean quite a lot of money to you, maybe a pension the rest of your life. So I stayed. Finally, I got home. Man, I'll tell you what, I was never glad to get out of the service in all my life. So, I was down in Milan getting my hair cut. And Mr. Townley, he was the plant manager of the Ford plant in Milan, come in and said, you Charlie Hagner? I said, yeah. He says, I'd like you to stop over my office as soon as you get your hair cut down there to the Ford plant. Okay, I will. He says, I got a job for you. He says, you can go to work this afternoon. I said, Mr. Townley, I just got home from the service, and I'm going up north fishing for about 2 weeks. Well, he says, it's too bad. I said, Ford Motor had a job for you. Well, I said, how would you feel if you'd been overseas all that while? And wouldn't you want a vacation? Yeah, I said, I'll tell you what. You go take your 3 or 4 weeks, whatever it is. When you come back, you come see me. So I come back, I seen him, and I started to work for Ford Motor Company. So I worked in Milan Ford Motor Company, I think, I was first started pumping tire in a coil. They made coils there, the coil. So I pumped the tire into the little boxes that held the coil. And then I got to be a coil winder, which is a lot better job. And you run these coils on a machine. And they have the arbors, and there's seven coils on every arbor. Well, anyway, from there, I bought a brand new 1947 Ford car. Excuse me. And bought this car, and I drove it into the plant, and the plant manager said, boy, you bought a new Ford car. You're all right. So any little job, detail he had, he said, would you do this, do that? So I got to use my car quite a lot for the company. Well, I think I worked there 4 years. My paycheck run about $62 every 2 weeks, and we got paid in cash. So the plant was going to be moved, so they moved that plant to Ypsilanti, and I went to Ypsilanti Ford's. So I was doing the same there, running this the coils on the driver over in Ypsilanti on the machine, and one day a friend of mine was, he was over at transportation. Mike Papp was his name. Would you like to try out to be a truck driver? I said, I sure would. I want to get out of that factory. So I went over and tried out for a truck driver, and I made it. So I started driving truck in Ypsilanti. Well, that was me in 47, and I worked there 3 years, driving truck there 3 years, and they bought a plant in Monroe, Kelsey Hayes. They bought the Kelsey Hayes plant, the Ford Motor Company did. So this friend of mine, he was in charge of transportation, they transferred him to Monroe to take over the plant down there, and he asked me if I'd go with him. So I went with him. He went down there first, but I was called about 2 weeks later, and I went down there in 1950. And I drove I drove a truck for 55 years. And one morning I went into work, and Mr. Papp, Mike Papp, says to me, he says, we're going to put you on salary, Charlie. We're going to make you a dispatcher. I had about 40 drivers. I said, I don't know nothing about dispatching. He says, you will. So they put me dispatching, and I dispatched for about 7 years, I guess. The truck's all out, lost my job. And one morning again, I went to the toilet, and my stool was black. Well, I went to first aid, and they sent me to Ann Arbor to get checked. And we got in Ann Arbor, and they said, You have ulcer, and it's bleeding bad. So they took me right into emergency right away and started giving me blood because I'd lost a lot of blood. And what was that doctor's name, Janice? And then Dr. Campbell was the doctor, and he said, we're going to operate now. Well, they operated, and it was how big was it? About the size of a dime? My intestine or whatever it was in my stomach was bleeding for about the size of a dime, and man, they did a good job. They fixed me all up. I was there, a month, I guess, time I got back to Ford's, time we got out of the hospital back to Ford's, and they wanted me to go back dispatching, and I says, I think I'm going to drive truck. I mean, I don't want to be confined to a chair or a lot of telephones. So I started driving truck, and I drove truck, that was the year of 62. I drove from 62 to 70. The transportation to Monroe moved to the Rouge. So I went to the Rouge to work for Ford Motor Company Rouge driving truck. So I stayed there 5 years, and I retired in the year of 1975, and I farmed, and pretty good. I did real good. And
what was the most rewarding thing that happened to you through the war?
Well, I was presented with the Silver Star. That's gallantry in action. That's when we saved the colonel. Everybody was dug in, they had scissor fire, and me and another fellow, Christian, he got his leg cut in two. Well, we had to go out and pull in this captain from the front lines because they wanted him into the CP. So I got a Silver Star for that. Yeah, and then for being wounded, I got the Purple Heart. And then I got, what was the other one? Bronze Star, which is beyond the call of duty. So the three medals I got. And I do believe that we fought for a good reason. That's why everybody was really, I never seen a better outfit I was with. They was fighting fools. And that's about all I got to say about myself. And thank you.